I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It seems that young people, not just young people, a lot of people, but particularly young people, are glued to their phones, to their smartphones, and they have them in their hip pocket or they're holding them virtually all day long, it would appear. This hour, we're going to have two different researchers who have examined how young people use their telephones. One of the researchers has more alarming news than the other. Our first guest is Professor Sonia Livingstone. She's a full professor in the Department of Media and Communications at the London School of Economics and Political Science. She teaches master courses in media and communications theory, methods, and audiences. She's the author of really a number of books and was awarded the title of Officer of the Order of the British Empire in 2014 for services to children and child internet safety. She writes that we worry that the digital deluge may affect our children's capacity to learn, to converse, to spell. Have they no time for the leisurely face-to-face conversations of old? So she decided to find out, and she spent a year with a class of 13-year-olds to find out how they use their phones, and when they're going to school, when they're at school, on the way home, and when they're with their family. Her findings are very interesting, and she wrote about them in the class Living and Learning in the Digital Age. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Sonia Livingstone, thank you very much for being with us. Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Well, that was kind of an interesting assignment for yourself, a year with 13-year-olds.
It was a little crazy when I think about it now, but at the time it seemed like I just needed to spend a real long amount of time with them to get to see the rhythms of their lives and to see, you know, how things kind of panned out over time and give them chance to reflect on some of the questions that I was asking them, as well as just time to see. It takes a long time to get to know a 13-year-old and to kind of win their trust so that you actually can, you know, hang out in their bedroom and see what they're doing online and so on. So I wanted to get past some of the kind of more quick research where people interview and leave and just get to know them in a bit more depth.
Yeah. Will there be a book from this experience?
Yes, the book is called The Class.
Oh, it is.
So in Britain, you know, at 13, kids spend a lot of their time in groups of about 28 kids. And so it was 28 kids that I wanted to spend time with. So The Class, Living and Learning in the Digital Age, that was that's the title of the book and the title of the project. And
Well, you say is that what teens wish for most, which is interesting, is control over how they spend their time and with whom, not just to use digital media for its own sake.
Right. I think 13, you know, we picked 13 because it's famously the difficult age, and parents kind of roll their eyes in despair a bit at the idea of having a 13 or 14-year-old in the house. And so it was that sense that, but from their point of view, I think they often feel like parents are expecting things of them, teachers are expecting things of them. People still sort of treat them like children, even though they want to be growing up. And control and a sense that they are kind of in charge of their lives is just, you know, it's important to all of us, but it's not easy for 13-year-olds to achieve. And so they, you could see them using their phones not just because they love technology, but because they want to feel in charge of something, and they want to feel in charge of their relationships and who they are, and their phone is a way that they could manage to do that.
And overall, you say you found yourself encouraged at how well they could handle all of these digital devices and the content that now fill their lives. And it's not going away. It's going to continue to fill their lives.
It's going to continue. And it's intense. I think anyone who's, if you spend time with kids, they are very often sensible. You know, parents will often say, of course, my child is pretty sensible and I can talk to them, but I worry about other people's kids who might be getting into trouble. But so I wanted that to kind of capture that sense that, yes, they are, they're thinking about it. They're worrying a bit for themselves sometimes. They're worrying a bit for their parents sometimes, who are also, of course, staring at their phones quite a lot. But they're also finding ways to manage it and not let it take over completely. And I wanted to give them credit for the ways in which they're working out their own ways of kind of getting some control, both over the phone but also over the relationships that it opens up for them. And I think we don't always give them that credit because they don't necessarily do it the way that we would do it.
But right. It is pretty remarkable, isn't it, when you think about it, Professor Livingstone, that we have these devices that can answer all these questions for you, that can get you in touch with somebody you haven't thought of in years and years, that can give you updated news, that gives you the weather all over the world. Yeah. I mean, it's an incredible piece of technology. Every time I use one, I think, this is something.
Yes, and we have put it in the hands of our children. And it is, you know, there are risks involved and there are problems that it brings, but it is an extraordinary source of power, and
yes.
It's just been in a few years. So, you know, as a society and as families, we are trying to work out some ground rules and get the hang of it, but also, I think, trying to work out what can it really be used for? You know, how do we get the best out of this extraordinary bit of technology we've given our kids? And, yeah, so I think that's an interesting challenge for to think about as well.
Well, you break down going to school, technology at school, walking home from school, at home before you go to sleep, etc. It was interesting to me that some of the young people who were using the social network thing successfully with their phones were texting to find out how everybody was doing, where they were going to meet for their walk to school, when they could be social with each other, right? They
right.
were arranging
right.
their social lives.
So a lot of it is about keeping up with where the others in their social network are and who's doing what. And, you know, they're trying to kind of find out who can I walk to school with, what's just happened in class that I want to be able to talk about when I get there, what did I miss because I was doing something else. So they use them to keep up, but I kind of wanted to challenge the idea that they're so absorbed in that actually they don't value talking to their friends face-to-face anymore, because a lot of it is really trying to find those moments in their day when they can get together face-to-face and talk about what they've, you know, what is going on and what matters in a way that is also, you know, potentially confidential and private and something they can kind of share their emotions with each other. So it's both, and you can see young people kind of move in and out. Intense moments staring at the phone, what is everyone doing? And then I'm with these five people now, or I'm with this one person now, and we're just going to talk about stuff, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. What about in school? How successfully were teachers using technology, and what kinds of technology?
Well, that's a good question. I think schools are also in a sort of experimental phase, and I can see that different schools, and even within a school, different teachers are finding different ways to use the technology. A lot of it is still a struggle. A lot of it is still, they have a great idea for how the technology can enable more learning or more connections, you know, across schools or to different information sources, and then it doesn't work properly, or it needs updating, or it's difficult to use somehow. And so there's quite a lot of disappointment, I think. And one thing children are learning is the technology doesn't always work the way people want it to, and it doesn't bring all those opportunities, and that's when they start doing those old-fashioned things of whispering to each other and chatting behind, you know, behind their hands and so on. But there are, you know, there are some ways in which schools are figuring out some fantastic things to do with the technology, and that's where, you know, getting back to what the potential of this technology is, I think there's a lot that everyone can be learning about. What are the really good instances where it does open up the chance to connect, I don't know, with a school in another country, or to allow the kids to kind of be creative and upload content and share and collaborate on their ideas in ways that just wasn't possible in the days of pen and paper. So it's you know, swings and roundabouts, and sometimes it goes well, and sometimes it just pisses everyone off, and they just feel it's really frustrating.
What are the policies when it comes to being able to carry your cell phone in your backpack in schools in the UK? Are you allowed to or not?
In the UK, they're generally allowed to carry them, but they're not allowed to be seen to use them in school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those moments where the problems that the phones bring is kind of outweighs the benefits. So, yes, as you said just now, you can look at your phone and look up anything and get information in an instant. But because the teachers fear, sometimes rightly, that the kids will get distracted and start doing their Facebook, then so they ban them. And we haven't found a way of, you know, managing how the phone can just be used for learning without it also being used for distraction. So there's a challenge. So we say, yeah, bring it to school, that's fine, but don't be seen to use it.
And when they're at home, you write about doing homework often accompanied by Facebook. This is something we'll talk about the next half hour because our guest believes that we're seeing serious psychological problems caused by having the phone always there and all this constant stream of information. Can you do your homework and navigate Facebook at the same time?
I don't think actually any of us are very good at multitasking, and I don't think teenagers are better than any of us. What I think they find it good for is having a chat when something is a boring and mundane school task they've been given. Like, I don't know, copying something out or colouring something in or, I don't know, it's not always the most exciting work. They do quite a bit of just orienting to each other. Have you done that question yet? I wasn't sure. Was I meant to do this page or that page of the work?
Right.
Because teenagers forget by the time they get home and they need to remind each other what they're meant to be doing. So they say that's really important. And then, yes, they will distract each other and everything. You know, the phone is kind of constantly pinging and saying, listen to me, listen to me. Homework will take twice as long as it need to, as every parent knows, and that's when they really want to say, put it away, get the homework done, and then you can, you know, then you can talk to your friends.
Yeah, and what about during, was there family time in many of the 28 homes you were visiting where you were speaking with your siblings or your pet and you were having dinner together and talking face-to-face about issues?
It varies a lot, and, you know, some families are not, families aren't always happy places, so it's, it doesn't always make everyone happy to get together. Sometimes you can see it's sort of helpful if everyone's got something else to concentrate on and you can get along a bit better. So I don't want to, you know, kind of promote the idea that families would all be much happier if they could all be together all the time, because I don't think they would. But I would say that most families find some ways of being together, and sometimes it's face-to-face around the dinner table talking about the day. Sometimes it's doing a shared activity, but sometimes it's using the technologies. So I saw a fair number of dads kind of bonding with the kids around computer games. And I saw a fair number of parents who, you would think that the kids were just sitting in front of the telly or an iPad or something and playing or watching, but actually the parent or mum might be coming in and out and she's sort of part of it in a way, and they can share a joke and then off she goes again. So I think people find ways to be together that doesn't always involve that very intense moment of sitting at the table together. And that intense moment of really looking each other in the eye, that can be quite hard for a 13-year-old. So some of the other ways of being together as a family, I think we should value.
Were there rules in a lot of these families? You simply can't have your device at the dining room table?
You know, I think the hardest thing about the rules is that parents have to follow them too.
Right.
And that's the tough one. The rule I see emerging, which I think is really probably a good one, is no phones in the bedroom. You leave your phone in the downstairs when you go to bed. And not everyone can do that. I probably couldn't quite manage it myself, but I could try if I had to. I think, so people are finding different rules. Yeah, trying not to use them while having meals, trying not to use them while talking to each other. But other times when people say it can be really nice in the evening, we all sit in front of a film on the television, and yes, everyone's looking at their phone as well, so we're sort of together, and we're sort of not together. And sometimes with a teenager, that's the best you can do.
Isn't that the truth? We're together and we're not together. And
yeah,
absolutely. Let's welcome phone calls for you. We're talking about young people's use of digital devices, particularly their smartphones. Our guest, the first half hour of the show, did a very interesting thing. She's from the UK and she spent a whole year with 28 13-year-olds to actually get comfortable with them and figure out when they used their smartphones, whether or not they were sort of addicted to them. It was like an appendage, when they just talked to each other face-to-face, how they use these devices. Professor Sonia Livingstone is a professor of social psychology at the London School of Economics and Political Science, wrote her findings in the class Living and Learning in the Digital Age. A little later this hour, we'll speak with a research associate in psychology who thinks that we become quite addicted to our smartphones, and young people particularly, and that many who don't have ADHD may be exhibiting signs of ADHD because of their use of these devices. So what do you think about all of this? If you're a young person, really young person, 13 or 14, I hope you're still in school, but maybe you were 13 or 14 not that long ago, or you have 13 and 14 and 15-year-olds, teenagers in your house, what is their use of these digital devices? It seems to me as though they're going to be involved in a digital kind of world in the way that I never was, certainly, and that it's not going to go away. So what's the best use? How are young people using this whole world that's been created as a result of smartphones? Here's our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, or on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Digital devices is what we're talking about. Our guest the first half hour spent an entire year with 13-year-olds to find out how they're using digital devices. And her findings are in the class Living and Learning in the Digital Age. And let's take our first caller, Julia in Superior. Hi, Julia.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead.
I'd like to say that a lot of teenagers basically are just using their phones for social media. You know, they're commenting on their friends' posts, and they're not really gaining a lot of knowledge from what they're doing with their phones.
Not gaining knowledge, what, about the world or about each other?
Yeah. I'd say about the world. I mean, yeah, they might be gaining knowledge about each other, but how is that going to, you know, help them in the long run?
Mm-hmm. Professor Livingstone?
I think a couple of things about that. I mean, I agree with you. Yes, it's an age where they're really interested in each other. I think they're learning some things about how to get on and how to kind of manage themselves and their friendships, which is hard and takes a fair amount of attention. They have to work out who they are. And a lot of it is, a lot of that commenting and posting pictures, I see as a kind of experimentation with, you know, who am I? Who am I going to be? What are my values? Who do I want to be with? Who do I not want to be with? I think it's a perfectly kind of fair way to spend the time. It's not the only thing you'd want them to do. So, yes, you want them to learn. And I would love there to be more things for kids to do on their phones that would take them to an exciting world of information and, you know, like news for kids, for example, or, you know, there could be a lot more possibilities that haven't exactly been provided. So perhaps that leads them back to their friends a bit.
Mm-hmm. But at the age of 13, that is so true, that age group. You're trying to figure out your friends, as you said, who you are in the world. It's front and center, isn't it?
I think it is. I think, you know, I also saw these 13-year-olds, they were beginning to find different ways that they would be interested in the world. So some might be, I don't know, they might get interested in the environmental movement, or some might be interested in politics, or a lot of them follow celebrities and sports, which is, you know, may not be the information that Julie was thinking of, but it is a way of them, you know, kind of getting interested in the wider world, and that will take them places they can't expect, and, you know, might prove interesting.
Yeah. Thanks, Julia. Tony in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I've got a couple of screenagers at home, and it's annoying sometimes. Every once in a while, you just want to pull out your gray hair and ask them to grow some gray hair before they make their decisions, and they'll look back at you and go, but 10,000 of my socially aware friends online tell me I'm okay with this.
Yeah. Sorry.
A lot of what they believe and their experiences without actual experience to back up their thoughts.
Mm. Yeah. And one of the really hard things about, you know, for them being 13 or 14 now is when they say something silly or they try out something that goes wrong or they make a mistake, it's left there on the social network or on their phone. And, you know, if I think back to some of the things that, you know, I said when I was 13, and thank goodness no one can ever remember them and they're gone. So it's kind of hard. You know, 13-year-olds need to, yes, they're impulsive. Yes, they make mistakes. Yes, they try things out. That's sort of what we want for them. But now they've got this device that keeps a record of everything and they can be, you know, laughed at for it or bullied for it. That makes it very hard. So we want them to wise up, but they can't wise up when they're only young teens, because that's what being a young teenager means.
That's right. Tony, thanks very much for your call. Matt in Indianapolis. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Matt.
Hello. Oh, hi, yes. Actually, what I was going to say is this, though. I have five kids. From the age of 14 to the youngest is 5. They're all involved in using the iPad and smartphones. And I've noticed they have gained an incredible amount of knowledge from science to history that I was not able to when I was that age. I think it's a positive sign. However, I am also cautious in the sense of overusage and become hyperactive, because I do see that as well. They become, the brain is really active on all this knowledge. So often I have my kids coming up to me asking questions about world history. They saw something on the internet, science, in general. It's just incredible. Yes, it is beneficial to use, but we have to be careful and not let you use too much of it.
So they on their own, Matt, will go to different websites and they'll learn about the world? Or
yeah, basically, let's say they start discussing a subject of a type of doll, for instance, where it made and how people do it, and then they love seeing videos. Obviously, we put some restrictions on what they can see as well on the video, on YouTube, and so on. But they do spark some curiosity in some subject, and then they exchange information themselves. And I've seen that very attentively. Or they come up to me and ask questions about that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all that, though, being the parent, being involved like I am myself, I'm very educated, and I push my kids to learn history and politics, everything a little bit. So right. I do see that they gain a lot.
So I think that's really nice, the way you talk about them coming up to you and wanting to share what they found out and wanting to talk about it. I mean, as you say, that really does show you're a very engaged parent, and, you know, that's something that I think, yeah, a lot of people would like it if their kids did come up to them more and want to share things. So it is partly, you know, maybe for people to think a little bit about what kind of parent they are, and do they get involved? Do you kind of look at your child and say they're on the screen, I don't know what they're doing, or do you say, let me get in there and share it with you and talk to you about it and make it an opportunity for some kind of family interaction?
Well, you say in a piece that we read about your work that digital devices and the uses that the teens that you studied put them to have become teenagers' way of asserting their agency, which is a good way to put it. That is what's going on, isn't it?
And sometimes they assert it to keep their parents and their family away, because they want to carve out a kind of private space for themselves or their friends. And sometimes they use it as a way of connecting, and, you know, they've got something they know about and they would like to tell their father in this case, or they would like to show their little brother and sister. You often see teens, you know, kind of very careful and helpful with their younger brothers and sisters, showing them and protecting them and explaining, and you know, that's a nice role for them too.
Yeah. Oh, it's hard to imagine where all this is going, isn't it, Dr. Livingstone? 10 years from now, you just got to wonder.
When you hear about how, you know, there's going to be computers in our fridges and our clothes and everything, and that's coming really soon now, though, if it's not already here. So,
yeah, there's always going to be a lot more challenges for the parents to get their heads around.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being with us.
That was a pleasure. Thank you.
Callers. Yeah. Thanks to you, Professor Sonia Livingstone, professor in the Department of Media and Communications at the London School of Economics and Political Science. She followed 28 13-year-olds in the UK for a year to find out how indeed they did use their smartphones and how they were used as a means of communication, how schools use them, etc., and how they became an instrument of some power for them as they negotiate who they are in the world and bring the world into them as well. She's the author or editor of 20 books and was awarded the Officer of the Order of the British Empire in 2014 for services to children and child internet safety. We just stay on smartphones now, but we have a different point of view and different research from a research associate in psychology at the University of Virginia. Our guest is Costa Kushlev, and he is concerned about the pervasiveness of smartphones and the connection, possibly, of increased distractedness and hyperactivity, and some people suffering from ADHD with those kinds of symptoms, not necessarily ADHD, but ADHD kinds of symptoms as a result of the pervasiveness of smartphones. Professor Kushlev, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Tell me about the study you did. 221 millennials. You got them all together. What'd you look at?
That's right. Well, so as you were discussing before, you know, smartphones can be very useful in our lives, but a lot of people are reporting more and more that they find them very distracting as well. And so what we wanted to do is kind of go beyond just the survey data, sort of people reporting what they think phones do in their lives, and try to actually experimentally look at whether we can isolate the effects of smartphones on distraction. We also wanted to look at hyperactivity, as one of your callers mentioned before, you know, these constant notifications and constant engagement with our smartphones while we're doing other things can sort of lead to this sense of hyperactivity. And so what we did was we took this or recruited these 221 participants, and we basically asked them to do two different things on two different weeks. So for 1 week, we asked them to silence their phones and sort of try to keep their phones not right in front of them, so maybe in a pocket or their bag. And these same participants were then asked for a second week to keep their phone on ring or vibrate whenever possible, so that they can sort of hear when new notifications are coming in, and also whenever possible to keep their phone around so that they, you know, it's easily accessible to them. And so at the end of each of those weeks, we asked people to sort of self-rate themselves on 18 symptoms of inattentiveness and hyperactivity. Now, we thought it would be interesting if we actually used the same symptoms used to diagnose ADHD and to see whether, this small manipulation of silencing one's phone could have an effect on how inattentive and hyperactive people felt. And indeed, we found that when people were silenced their phones, they felt less hyperactive and less inattentive, or I guess you can say more attentive.
Mm. Were they nervous about who may have been sending them an important message?
Yeah, when we were sort of going into the study, we weren't quite sure what we'll find exactly because of the reason you suggest, because we were thinking, well, maybe people would be more hyperactive and more inattentive if they're constantly sort of thinking about missing notifications and that sort of thing. I should clarify here that, you know, this was a field study, so we basically just told people to try their best to follow these instructions. But we also made it clear that, if they really needed to receive a notification or something like that, that they could turn their phone, on ring or vibrate, that sort of thing. And so I think you're right that, you know, this strong approach of just silencing one's phone is not really, you know, sort of a practical one in the real world. I mean, we keep our phones on ring or vibrate because it's useful and we want to hear new notifications. But in this case, we just wanted to sort of isolate this effect sort of as an initial demonstration that phones could be contributing to us all feeling a little bit more hyperactive and inattentive, even if we're not diagnosed with ADHD.
Right. And did you have a sense, Professor, of how frequently these students were using their phones? Did they have them right next to them when there were messages coming in? They were checking every hour or every 5 minutes or what?
We didn't sort of ask people to report in too much detail, you know, how are they using their phones, because there's already quite a lot of survey data from Pew Research and so forth for, you know, that age group. And, you know, because, you know, some of the questionnaires were sort of administered on a daily basis, we didn't want to sort of overwhelm participants with too many questionnaires in this two-week study. So we tried to sort of keep it short that way. But there's, as I said, quite a lot of evidence from Pew Research and, you know, other survey companies showing that, you know, people do receive quite a few messages, especially in that age group. I mean, depending on the survey, you know, some numbers have been suggested to, you know, 100, 200,
whoa,
and so forth, depending
really?
On. Yeah, so just reading an article this morning from the Washington Post where one teenager was reporting that, you know, they had lost their phone, and when they sort of recovered it 3 days later, they had more than 200 unanswered messages. So it is quite a lot.
Yeah. And is this something that is mostly a problem area for teenagers? Are adults victims of the same kind of, not victims, but are you seeing the same kinds of symptoms of ADHD kinds of behavior, although not necessarily ADHD, among people who are in their 30s or 40s or 50s? We all have these phones now.
That's right. Well, I definitely think that with teens and younger millennials, you know, the notifications might be a little bit more than, you know, somebody 50 years old or older, but still, you know, we sort of like use it for different things. So if a teenager is getting a lot of notifications through, you know, Snapchat, an adult might be getting a lot of notifications through their email, you know, depending on what they do and so forth. And again, there is quite a lot of survey data out there. Again, the Pew Research Center suggests that amongst millennials, so 18 to 29-year-olds, you know, 73% reported feeling distracted by their phones. And in the next age group, 30 to 49, 62% reported feeling quite distracted. Now, when you go above 50, the percentage drops to about 32%. So there is certainly, you know, the problem seems to be a little, you know, more aggravated with younger people, but certainly we all seem to be experiencing these symptoms.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how many of these there are in the time, as you remind us in the article that you wrote, and the time it just took you to say that last sentence, 1,000 smartphones were shipped to their new owners. 1,000 in 22 seconds.
That's right. Yeah, it's really, you know, amazing how fast this technology is spreading. And so, you know, and again, I think part of the reason why it's spreading so fast is because it is very useful. I mean, I have a smartphone and, you know, I'm very happy that I do have one. You know, I can get directions to a place. You know, I can easily connect with friends and so forth. But at the same time, it's, I think, important to sort of start thinking about how this pervasiveness of these devices, now they're not tied to our, you know, desktops or a coffee shop. They're everywhere with us. So we really need to be starting to think how they might interfere with sort of other activities that are also important to us, such as spending time with family, being productive at work, or even spending time with our friends.
Yeah. And yet, when you think about it, and the fact that in 22 seconds, 1,000 smartphones are being delivered to new people, when you think about it, don't you think that the opposite is going to be happening, that 5 years from now, we're not going to be spending more face-to-face time with our family and our friends? This is going to evolve into something that we know not what it's going to be yet.
Well, I'm actually pretty hopeful. And part of the reason why I'm doing this research to sort of identify some of the potential problems in the existing technology is because I believe we're really right at the start of this amazing technological era.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe it was only 10 years ago or less than that the first iPhone was introduced. And so I think, we shouldn't sort of accept defeat yet and sort of start thinking about how we can design these devices in a way that harnesses all the useful ways we can use them, such as get information or connect with others, but at the same time minimize these annoying parts of them, such as, being distracted or sort of being addicted to the phone to the detriment of other activities. And so, there's sort of a lot of ideas out there about how this might be done, but one sort of idea is that phones need to become more sort of psychologically smart. So they need to be aware of what the person is sort of trying to do currently, depending on, where they are, what time of day it is, and that sort of thing. And depending on, the context and what people needs are at this particular moment, the phone could sort of decide whether, a particular notification should be sort of delivered now or not.
Oh.
So one idea is that, for example, let's say a parent is picking up his kid from school at 5 o'clock, so the phone just knows that that's the time parents spend time with their kids, so it stops, non-essential email notifications on their phone.
Oh,
or
that's
something
interesting.
Like that.
Huh.
Yeah, again, in our study, we had this very sort of on or off approach, which I don't think is very practical, where you just silence your phone. But I think in the future it would be nice if we have these more nuanced approaches to delivering notifications and sort of grabbing people's attention.
Yeah. Well, let's welcome phone calls for our guest. We're speaking this half hour of the show with Professor Kosta Kushlev, and he is a professor of psychology at the University of Virginia. His research examines the factors that promote or diminish happiness and well-being, and he did a very interesting study with 221, I believe it was, students at the University of British Columbia, denying them a cell phone. Denying is too strong a word. Having them not use cell phones for a week, and then the next week using them, and looked at symptoms of ADHD among those groups. And he found that those who were using their phones, and they were using them a lot, that anything had difficulty sustaining attention or listening to others. They were showing signs of hyperactivity, fidgeting, feeling restless, excessive talking, and interrupting of others. And the findings, he said, should concern us. And he just talked about that would be an interesting thing. There's a certain time of day, unless highly important, you shouldn't be getting messages. This is family time. It can be switched off. That can be in a phone to not give you messages at certain times. What do you think? Here's our phone number. We already have some messages coming in online. And we welcome your phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. He is author of a piece, our guest, "Are Our Smartphones Afflicting Us All with Symptoms of ADHD? A Common Sight, Smartphones at Mealtime." So let's go to you momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. First message on Facebook, Professor Kushlev, and Stacy writes, "My son is 13 and researches subjects that interest him on YouTube constantly. He teaches me new things every week. Keeping an open mind has been the most important action I've been able to take at his mom. As his mom, technology is good." How do you respond to that?
Well, I absolutely agree with that. Yes, technology is good. And again, I think when you ask people about technology, you clearly sort of get this sense that overall the net effect of these technologies on our lives is a positive one. So, for example, you know, when people are asked to decide whether their phone is more distracting or more connecting, 72% say connecting, and only, you know, about 30% say distracting. Or when people are asked to say, is their phone more helpful versus annoying, 93% say helpful versus annoying. So I think if we, you know, take those statistics at face value, I think you know, we can sort of get the sense that phones and other technology are more helpful than they're harmful. And so my argument, or what we've shown here, is not that, you know, phones are bad or anything like this, but simply that this pervasiveness of smartphones in our lives could be changing sort of how we relate to other activities, could be changing our psychological sort of state, making us a little bit more inattentive and hyperactive in this case. And so we should, you know, we shouldn't just accept all these negatives with the, you know, overwhelmingly positive sides of technology. And we should think about how we can improve it.
Let's go to Mel in Sun Prairie. Hi, Mel.
Hi. I wanted to just let you know about a strategy that I use to kind of create boundaries. And what I do is, in the evening, I press the button that looks like a little moon, the Do Not Disturb. And so I'm not silencing my phone, but what I'm doing is I'm blocking out anybody who's going to call me, except for those numbers that I put in my favorites list. And so my mother and my father could sort of break through in the middle of the night if there was a medical emergency because they're on my list. But anybody else will just go to voicemail.
Yeah, I think that's an absolutely brilliant strategy for this sort of thing, because a lot of times people keep their phone's notifications on or on ring because they don't want to miss such sort of important calls that might be, you know, emergencies even. But at the same time, a lot of the notifications that we get are on the annoying side. So right before I joined you here, I was listening to the program and my phone, my mobile phone rang. And so I, you know, I was dealing with that for a few minutes. So so I think there is sort of this important distinction between how we can sort of allow the important calls to come through while, you know, not necessarily having to be bothered by things that we're not wanting to be bothered by at that particular moment.
When you think about it, Professor Kushlev, it's such a change for us from just a few years ago. We've got these phones with us now all the time. We never used to have that, you know, looking up things and Facebook and all of this. It's just, it's such a different way of life. It's really changed us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I always found it amazing that our phones now have more computing power than Apollo 11 when it landed on the moon.
I know.
And so it's pretty, you know, amazing that we have these devices in our pockets. And I completely agree with you. It's sort of difficult to sort of remember how we did some things when these devices weren't around. And so, you know, now when we're finding directions, we just, you know, whenever, wherever we are, we can just do that. We don't have to rely on anybody else or anything like this. And so I think...
I'm sorry, that was the other line. Yeah.
Okay. I think what was interesting is, you know, that some of those younger people are now sort of growing up in this world that they didn't know, you know, that they haven't seen anything without these devices around us. And
yes.
I think there's quite a lot of interesting research now coming out looking at how, you know, the time people spend on their phones and other screen time might actually be sort of affecting sort of social and emotional development. So the ability to, for example, perceive nonverbal emotional cues from others. Because on the one hand, it's great that we can connect with our friends at all times and we can chat with our friends on Snapchat and so forth. And people do use them to do use their phones to connect with their friends or young people especially. But at the same time, you know, we are, you know, getting more and more distracted by these devices.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mel, so much for your call. Dorothy in Oshkosh, hi.
Hi, I'm calling. It's a very interesting topic. I'm really intrigued. And everyone in my family, we have four grown children, everyone has a smartphone except for me. And I'm calling you on an old-fashioned flip phone. I do get a lot of grief from my kids sometimes about that, but it's not that I'm afraid to get one, but I think I've just never been one to do something because everybody else is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like how much smartphones cost, but I do have a friend who bought a Cricket for $19, and then I think she's paying like $35 a month. So I'm thinking about getting one, but in the meantime, I really haven't felt like I really need one. I do have, I'm online on my laptop at home. The only disadvantage is that if someone sends me a message and I'm not home, then I'm not getting it unless they phone text me.
You think you're going to cave, Dorothy?
Pardon me?
Do you think you're going to cave and get a smartphone sometime soon or not?
I think I will. I'm pretty sure I will at some point, just so I'll be more mobile. My youngest daughter tells me that I'll love it because then I'll just won't be so feel so attached to my laptop.
Right.
Which, yeah, and that definitely is a thing. I'm definitely attached to my laptop.
Yeah. How many Dorothys are there, Professor Khrushchev? How many of us have these smartphones now?
Quite a lot. I think the latest numbers from the Pew Research Center from 2015 was that about 75% of Americans now own smartphones.
Are you kidding me? 75%. Oh, my.
Yes, quite a few. And, you know, and of course, this doesn't include the people who own just a regular phone or a regular flip phone.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, quite a lot. And again, more and more people are getting them. I mean, I do remember that I sort of resisted getting a phone for a couple of years or a smartphone and used my old flip phone. And when I first got the smartphone, I remember just sort of being like, wow, I'm never going back to this older thing. It's so much nicer, easier to use, and so forth. But then several years later, I think I am noticing some changes in my behavior where,
really?
You know, I'm not, you know, I'm not as productive sometimes as I'd like to be. And in fact, the times when I'm most productive are the times when I don't constantly stop to, you know, open another app. And I mean, I think that's part of the problem. It's not just the notifications, but there is just so many different apps that you can open. I mean, I can, like,
I know.
Look at my, you know, I can look at how many steps I took today, or I can look at the weather, you know. Do
right.
I really need to look at the weather, like, 10 times a day?
I know.
So I think that's sort of the difference between, you know, being useful and, you know, sort of being too much.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with a self-examined life, though, right? Better
right.
than that than,
yeah.
than
research
the opposite.
Research is me search, is what they say.
Exactly. Let's go to Anne in Random Lake. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I joined the show late, so maybe this was covered, but I heard the guest mention research about how people view their own phones as distracting or connecting, et cetera, and I immediately thought, has there been any similar research for people to judge other people's phones as distracting or connecting? Because, you know, we typically think of everything, you know, that we do is okay, but everyone else is wrong. So I was just wondering briefly if there was any of that type of research, and I will listen off the air.
All right,
thank
Anne.
You.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think there is some research sort of suggesting that people are becoming more and more aware of how their own smartphone use might be affecting others. And so, you know, I think there's more and more sort of social norms that are evolving around what's okay and what's not okay to do when you're spending time with others, partially based on this sort of awareness that, you know, probably it's not okay to answer a text message when somebody's talking directly at you, for example. And so I think there's sort of some research, for example, suggesting that parents, you know, are less willing or find it less socially appropriate to use their phones at the dinner table when kids are around versus only adults around and that sort of thing.
Hmm. Well, Professor Khrushchev, thank you so much for being with us. It was really an interesting conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And you're on a landline phone, aren't you?
Yes, had to be for
The other
it was
thing,
very difficult to find.
Was it? Yeah, it bugs me because the quality of phone interviews on the radio is so much better with a landline, and some we're running into people who don't have them anymore. They're not thinking about the radio. They should.
Yeah, Yeah. I had to visit a friend.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Who apparently bought this because their daughter didn't want to... mobile phone for a while, but now she's caved in. So.
Well, she does. Well, you sound great, so
thank you very much.
Thank you. Right. Our guest this half hour of the program, Professor of Psychology at the University of Virginia, Professor Kosta Kushlev. Thanks very much to Scotty Myers for producing this program and to Scotty for on-air production as well in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Have a good Memorial Day weekend. I'll be off on Monday visiting my parents' graves in Illinois. And so we'll be with you again on Tuesday, when we will do an All Things Political Tuesday instead of Monday at 1 o'clock.